Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fadeaway.
Bryant for the win.
Bang!
James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. With 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And yesterday, it became official. Walker Kessler is a Laker. No expansion of the trade or anything like that. Done just as it's reported in a sign and trade for 2 firsts and 2 swaps. D, we got some good reporting from Kobe Price and a couple others on the Jonathan Kuminga rumors. We'll get to that a little bit later. But now that we've had a little bit of distance between the initial breaking news of Kessler coming to the Lakers and now it being official, I just wanted to revisit him for a segment, having a bit of time to think about it and sit with it. How do you feel about Walker Kessler officially becoming a Laker?
I feel just as good as I felt when it happened, honestly. And the discourse sort of ran through the classic news cycle of however it's going to go, right? Either, oh, this is awesome, and then the pushback comes, or, oh, this sucks, and then there's more analysis of it. And the Kessler signing was interesting because I feel like there were definitely two factions that were saying those two sides of the equation with very little meeting in the middle there. The through line for me, though, is that everyone acknowledges Kessler's a good fit for the team, that he's a good player. I think that the points about him being unproven or untested within the context of high-level basketball, those are points that we made right in the aftermath of him signing. So I'm not going to disagree with any of that stuff. I think what it comes down to me, Pete, is I'm putting the price tag to the side, both in terms of his salary, which I think is kind of commensurate with what high-level centers are paid. The degree to which you believe he's a high-level center now, I think, can be debated. But obviously, the Lakers are paying him as though they believe he's going to be that, and be that within the context of this team. And I think that's what's important as part of this conversation. I think he's the perfect fit of a center next to Luka Doncic, especially, but Austin Reeves as well. And if you can get a player at a position of need that is this great of a compliment to your two currently best players, I don't see that as being a bad thing, even within the context of what they're paying him in terms of salary or what they sent out in draft compensation. Maybe that last point will look stupid in 6 years, right?
I think it's going to be the opposite, D. I think that his contract's going to look eminently reasonable in a couple of years as the cap keeps going up by 10% each season. And he's paid currently, I think, like the 10th highest salary among centers or something like that. And in a couple of years, that's going to be 15th, you know, with guys up for extension and all of that. So I think actually there's more of a chance that it's like, hey, having Kessler in the mid-30s or whatever it's going to be in a couple of years, that's going to look pretty good.
I would argue, too, that even if the cap, this is a thing we haven't discussed in terms of league-wide stuff, the projections have come in a little bit lower than 10%, not even a little bit lower. This year, I think the cap went up 6.5%. And the latest projections for next season are only 5.5%. So they've gotten more conservative.
I stand corrected then, yeah.
Yeah, but still, Kessler is signed on a non-bird rights contract. And so I believe his raises are only going to be like 4%. So the growth of the cap will still outpace his raises. And he's not a max player. And so Austin's salary is the one where it's just like, if the cap's only going up by 5.5% or 6% a year and his raises are 8%, he'll make 26% of the cap and then 27.5% of the cap, and his will go up. I also think Austin's salary will be fine in a few years as well, as long as he continues to produce. But in getting back to Kessler, his salary is whatever to me. He's going to make what Jared Allen makes. And if I think he's going to be as good or a better player than Jared Allen, it's fine. Once the guy is paid and once you've sent out the stuff, we can hand wring about that stuff all we want. Believe me, we're Lakers fans. They did it with Anthony Davis for damn near a full season until they couldn't anymore because they won the goddamn championship, right? So hand-wringing only goes so far to me. What I'm actually looking for is, how do the pieces fit? And that's the part of the acquisition no one can deny. They can start to poke holes and whatever. And I don't want to make this like a us against all the people who are against the... No, to me, when you ask me how I feel only emboldened as I've watched more tape and gone back to the previous season when he played a lot. There's a reason why he was the top target for the Lakers and why they kept putting stuff into the goodie bag to give to the Jazz to be like, well, how about this too? Mm-hmm. Well, how about this as well? Oh, you want one more swap? Okay, we'll do that too, because they identified this guy as their guy, and I believe in that as well.
The point of this pod is, in many ways, to get into the details and to hand-wring and, you know, get worked up about, oh, Jaden Hardy's going to be our fourth guard. I can't believe it. I was a little riled up yesterday. But it's important to not miss the forest from the trees, and we got who was my number one target of any player overall. Prior to all of this, this isn't a retrospective position. This is something I believe before we went into free agency. He was far and away the number one target I had. And we got the number one guy I wanted in the draft prior to us making that pick as well. And so as we, you know, hand-wring about Kuminga and the perimeter defense and all of that, it's super important to not miss the fact that we got this guy. He's 24 years old. He's exactly the type of player I think that fits with Luka and Austin. And as we'll get into a little bit later in this pod and future pods, I think symbolizes somewhat of a shift in the direction the Lakers offense is going to go while still being a very good pick and roll player. And in the press release the Lakers put out yesterday, you know, Rob Pelinka had a quote kind of alluding to that. We've got two elite pick and roll guards and we've got a really good role man, despite the, he's not the soar 12 feet in the air type of throw down a lob type of player, D, but he's a very good overall player that I think Laker fans are really going to be excited to watch. And so we'll get into more and more of the details of his game as the summer goes on and just kind of what Laker fans can expect. But again, from a not missing the forest from the trees perspective, this was the one thing that really had to get done this summer. And they got the number one guy. And I'm just thrilled that he's a Laker.
Are you disappointed at all that the trade didn't get expanded? We had been sort of thinking about that for several days, almost hopeful. I feel like we were wish casting a little
bit.
And I'm wondering how it came off to listeners, like, oh, do they know something? And clearly we
didn't know
something, because I was a bit disappointed just because I wanted an additional move. I know they're working on the Kuminga stuff and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I also thought, as I said in yesterday's pod, that this was a really good opportunity to sort of expand something into a bigger deal, considering it was the biggest transaction that they were going to make, and an actual transaction where another team was already involved. They weren't just signing a free agent, they were making a trade, and the ability to expand it was something that was there. And so I will admit I was hopeful and a little bit like, oh, okay,
sure.
Well, happy with the result, but still, oh man, I wish they would have been able to do something else as well.
That's why I gave the disclaimer that I gave yesterday, in that they could be looking to expand it and then ultimately it becomes, no, this isn't the place to be able to do that and we'll just consummate the trade the way that it is. Obviously, the Lakers do need to make another move or two, but there are multiple paths to be able to acquire that type of player, in which the Kessler trade was one of them. And I thought, because of the size of the salary going out, had the most amount of flexibility within that. But you also, I don't think you can let that linger too long without officially making it happen. And so I guess I'm a little disappointed, but not really, because I think that there are multiple ways to be able to get that next player. And so let's go to break here, come back and talk about that. So again, got some really good reporting from Kobe Price yesterday about the Jonathan Kuminga rumors between the contract that Brad Turner talked about with like a 2-year, $20 million structure. We got some idea of what Atlanta wants, which is taking on Vando and then a pick swap for the 2032 pick swap, the last first round pick that the Lakers have to move. But it's not even like moving a pick. It's, again, just a swap, which might not even convey. And then the thing that really stood out to me was a level of Lakers are interested in this, Kuminga is interested in this, and the whole thing, and not just Kobe's reporting, but overall, sure sounds like Jonathan Kuminga's agent is out there beating the streets. It's not something that I think is coming from a Lakers perspective. And I do think that there is a level of mutual interest that was conveyed in that, that I think there's negotiations going on right now. Lord knows we've had a couple of years with Kuminga negotiating with the Warriors and that being dragged out particularly long. We'll see if to what degree the Peyton Watson potential signing in Denver or where LeBron goes has an impact on this. Hard to tell from where we're sitting, but what was your perspective on just that reporting around Kuminga? And where do you stand on this idea of like they're kind of in this limbo right now?
So Kuminga's agent is an interesting fellow just because he not only negotiated in public, Pete, in terms of the stuff with the Warriors and like the back and forth and how that sort of got messy at the end or whatever. He went on the Hoop Collective, Brian Windhorst podcast.
That's
and
right.
Had an entire podcast. We talk about Rich Paul doing what Rich Paul does. And just as a side note, the Rich Paul stuff still sort of lingering in Lakerland is something that I wish would end if sometime soon.
If I could press a button and never have to see any clip from that pod ever again, I would press the hell out of it.
Anyways, so his agent went on a podcast during active negotiations and sort of made his pitch as to why he thought X about his client and why his client should do whatever, right? And I found that very interesting for an agent to sort of really turn the screws on things and flip the narrative and be like, I'm going to go out there very publicly. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that he's trying to get his client the best deal that he could. He got his client before a contract in the 20s of millions of dollars in order to play. Now, it was a 2-year deal with a team option. It wasn't as player friendly, but he made his player a bunch of money in that first year. And to me, it sounds like what he's trying to do is make his client some more money.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Lakers could pretty easily get to $10 million, I would imagine, just by stretching and waving Vando and maybe trading Dalton mm-hmm. into someone's cap space or a trade exception. And Dalton, to me, is a player who probably has neutral to, if it's negative, it's only slightly negative value. He's still on a rookie contract. He hasn't reached restricted free agency yet. And he's got promise as a player, Pete.
You only need to find one out of the other 29 teams who are being like, do you want this guy for free to be able to clear that cap space? So if they want to go down that route, like I think there would be a taker somewhere.
Yeah. And so getting to $10 million in cap space is, I would imagine, pretty simple in that it only really requires a Dalton trade. You don't have to do anything else. As you and I have been covering and talking about on the pod, with the trade rules and being able to take back more salary than what they send out because they're not an apron team, having Vando's contract out there as this sort of, we can stack $8 million onto this contract potentially and still execute a sign and trade, that's a valuable chip for Kuminga's side to be able to be like, well, all you gotta do is put this guy in the trade and then we can get up to $16, $17, $20 million dollars a season, and then it would really be worth our while. And so we're interested. We'd love to come to play. Can we find more money?
Yeah, right? That's where we're at right now, D. I think is just that idea of, we like the idea of him playing with Luka. We like the pitch that you gave to us. We'd like it even better if it were $12, $13 million instead of $10 million.
Or can you get us up to 15 and the MLE salary? Like, give us a floor? And another thing is they want to do a sign and trade because he keeps his bird rights.
Why is that important? Why is it important for the Lakers to be able to keep his bird rights?
Who it's really important for is Jonathan Kuminga,
uh-huh.
right? Because you allow yourself to continue to get the maximum raises on any of your contracts. Brian Windhorst said this about Chris Paul. Chris Paul kept his bird rights throughout pretty much his entire career. It wasn't until he signed with the Spurs, I think, as a free agent, that he no longer had his Bird rights. So it was like 18 seasons of Chris Paul continuing to flip his Bird rights via trade and being like, I want these rights to travel with me to enable myself to make as much money as I can within the context of whatever this team is going to offer me. So I think it's actually more important to Kuminga's side to keep his Bird rights. But the Lakers would then also be able to say, if it works out here with us, you can potentially get a much bigger payday with us. Exactly, right? And that's where I think the overlap in the middle of the Venn diagram lives for both of them. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the Lakers are open to a sign and trade as well. They just don't want Atlanta to be like, how about that swap that you guys have? That looks pretty enticing to us. Because the Hawks are an up-and-coming team. And with the new flattened lottery odds, all it takes is the Lakers to be in the play-in and for their pick to jump into the top four. And suddenly Atlanta's just like, wait, we got a top four pick just for sending them Jonathan Kuminga 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Sounds good to us.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason why the Lakers would hesitate at that. But I do think that it's important to the Lakers to keep his Bird rights because he's a high upside player. That's part of the appeal of him is he's super talented. And if he works out in that spacious environment, I love the phrasing that they used in the pitch, for Kuminga, if he works out for the Lakers, I don't want it to be a Malik Monk situation where it was like, you were really good for us, but we can't afford to keep you, which is what would happen if the Lakers just shed salary and signed Kuminga outright. It'd take a couple of years to get his early Bird rights and then the third season to secure his full Bird rights. If you do the sign and trade, you get it right away. And then you could also do, so for a sign and trade, it has to be at least a 3-year contract, but you can do those non-guaranteed years, options, things like that to sort of finagle it. But either way, the Lakers would keep his Bird rights in that instance. And so I think that's important for the Lakers to be able to cash in if Kuminga does work out there. Dee, what are your thoughts on the Vando part of it too, where he's somebody that's been sort of presumed to cost a first round pick to just get out of in the first place? How do you weigh Vando within the context of like sending him out and the value to the Lakers for that?
I don't think that first or what it's going to take for a player of Vando's salary level. I know he has a player option for his second year, but he's going to make $25 million over the life of this contract. His number is like 7 or 8% of the cap, honestly. It should take 2 seconds at the most to get off of him, honestly. And for the Lakers, it's like a $5 million cap hit on their books for 5 seasons. It's just like, do they want that? I don't think they want that. But in 5 seasons, $5 million is going to be the veteran minimum amount. I don't really anticipate that being prohibitive for them. I also don't envision them being a cap space team again through the life of Luka's contract, right? So I'm not super worried about that. And if I were the Lakers, it would be like, we're happy to stretch and waive this guy if it turns out that this is the best way to do the trade. And again, they can get to $12.5 million just with Jake or Hardy's contracts, right? It doesn't have to be Vando that goes out. And if Jake is a more viable option to them as a rotation player and Vando might not be, then it's like, let's do business on this level. We still do the sign and trade. We could throw in Dalton in that case, and we can even get to more money if that's the way to go. And I would imagine that there's a reason why the deal hasn't gotten done, because either the Lakers aren't keen on trading a swap, right? Or they're just like, look, there are other avenues to get to this that don't involve Vando, and we can do something else with this.
Yeah, and that's something else. That's what really sticks with me, is the idea of, well, what are the Lakers' alternatives there? So let's go to break. I want to talk about another bit of info that was in that report and just sort of contextualize the Lakers' pursuit of a starting forward. So on its surface, if we're talking the difference between Kuminga at 10 million or 12, 13, whatever, a couple million more, at the end of the day, it's similar to me for your argument of Vando's salary not going to matter much if you wave and stretch him. I think the most harmful part of that with Vando, as a quick aside, would be just Lakers being up against the apron a little bit more, you know, that, and that's not that big of a deal at the end of the day, I don't think. And so I agree with you that it probably shouldn't cost a first, even though I think that's been perception. But if you're talking like Jonathan Kuminga versus who the hell is going to be our starting forward, give him the extra couple of million. That's my thought process. And so the fact that the Lakers are not budging at the moment on that at least indicates that they have an alternative. And one of the things in Kobe's reporting was also a tidbit about how they don't find PJ Washington's four-year contract all that appealing, which is a bit of a head-scratcher for me considering the number of four-year contracts that they gave out this summer, and Washington's a good player. If that's true, I don't like that at all because I would love to have him at that starting four spot. But I do think that it indicates some level of alternatives for the Lakers, that they're in the mix for other players that they consider to be capable of filling that starting forward spot, and they won't go beyond a certain number with Kuminga. Now, will they eventually come to an agreement? They might, right? But I think that just if it were compared to the Kessler situation, you were talking about Utah saying, hey, throw in another swap or something like that. The alternatives there were not that great. They certainly weren't Walker Kessler level players. So if the Lakers were in that position where Kuminga or bust, I think they'd do it. I think they would push forward, yeah. And maybe they will. But the fact that they're not indicates to me a certain level of alternative.
Yeah, there's alternatives. And let me just say this, Pete, that the sort of merry-go-round musical chairs idea of power forwards right now that have a home but maybe don't, the wing idea, there's a scenario I played out yesterday, and it goes back to Rui signing with the Clippers. Another restricted free agent name that hasn't had any traction or any sort of buzz at all is our old friend Benedict Mathurin.
Mm.
Mathurin's a restricted free agent with the Clippers. The Clippers have been linked to Peyton Watson a bunch. And Yossi, who was on our pod, we talked about a bunch of stuff cap related, but he's very good and he has a Substack, The Third Apron, does a lot of writing and is very informative with all of his cap stuff. He was putting together scenarios where the Clippers could, after the Kawhi trade is consummated and everything else, and the John Collins signing trade is done with Detroit, that they could still be able to take in a contract up to $23.1 million and that they could potentially be an offer sheet team for Peyton Watson. And if they're going to be an offer sheet team potentially for Peyton Watson, what does that mean for Benedict Mathurin?
Mm.
Right? Would his rights get renounced again? Now, Mathurin is much more of a wing small forward than he is a power forward. That said, the prospect of getting a player like him, for example, to be the forward next to Luka and them just sort of figuring it out and being like, no, we're making a talent play, that's on the table for me as well. The Washington stuff is out there for me too as a, I think everyone's negotiating in public right now. That's not to say that the Lakers would be over the moon to take another 4 years of PJ Washington with like 80 something million left on his deal. I don't think that they'd be thrilled about that. I think that they'd be perfectly happy with him in their lineup though. And so some of this to me, I think some of that is a shot across the bow to the Kuminga stuff as just like, don't think you're the only girl at the dance. You're not. And then to the Mavs people, you think you would have us over a barrel because this is Luka's former teammate and a guy that we know works with him? Well, we don't like his deal.
Mm-hmm.
This is full-on lying season. And I'm not saying that Kobe is being taken advantage
of
here. He's reporting what I think is there's truth in all of this stuff. It's the level of like, why is it out there? Who benefits? And all of that, that you always have to be deciphering at this time of the year. And so the Lakers are out here trying to find a starting forward that they can slot next to Luka and in between him and Kessler as the other forward. And again, PJ Washington fits that idea great. So does Peyton Watson. So does Cam Johnson. Honestly, Mathurin does too, but to a different level. And so does Kuminga.
Yeah.
And if there are these options out there,
I'd be happy with any one of those dudes if they're starting for the Lakers next year. And to add a bit of context here, when I was working with the team and, you know, exposed to a little bit more information before it came out, that was the one thing that I noticed that Pelinka and company did talk to the media is when they were trying to send a message in terms of compensation about what they were and weren't interested in. And so I generally agree with the Lakers don't leak and talk to the media a whole bunch. However, at this point during lying season, we're one of the liars. And I'm not even saying these are lies, right? But it's a way to communicate to the rest of the league.
It's a way to recontextualize the conversation. And this is some of the stuff we were talking about when it came to LeBron and his sort of decision and how everything was being framed through LeBron's perspective.
Yes.
And then it didn't start to come out until after the fact that, well, actually, there were conversations with Luka and talking about 2026. And did those really involve LeBron? They kind of didn't. And then what does that mean? All of that reporting from Ramona Shelburne. And now after the fact, you hear people talking about, it's pretty clear that the Lakers were ready to move
right.
on.
Right. It drives me crazy because the whole time I'm like, is nobody interested in the Lakers' perspective on this?
But it's pretty clear. You were saying this on the pod, saying it months ago, honestly. You know, may want to actually investigate what the Lakers want in this situation. And you had said, too, it may be hubris that they're just like, hey, we could be a better team without
LeBron. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that, like, somebody should do some digging and try to find out where the Lakers are coming from on this.
I think when it came to the LeBron stuff, the Lakers were perfectly happy to keep their mouth closed. And I heard someone, and I can't remember who it was, it might have been Colin Cowherd, but someone of that ilk, that was basically just like, the Lakers are fine with LeBron and Rich Paul winning the press conference
exactly.
or like winning the media environment after this. And I don't think they're going to show much ego within this context and push back. But when it comes to actively saying we want a player or what are we going to do to fill this spot on our roster, and the vultures start to circle and they're like, can we extract this from them for a guy who we didn't even pick up his team option and he's a free agent? And now like, oh, well, we can allow them to pay him more. So let's gouge them a little bit for this. The Lakers are, yeah, now is the time to go out there and be like, maybe we'll look at this other option, or maybe we'll do this, or maybe we'll do that. And I get that we both like each other in this regard, but the kind of contract that we're looking at is this. And it wasn't only Kobe, it was McMenamin, mm-hmm. it was other reporters that were out there that were basically charting out the path of what we're looking to do is pay him kind of this amount of money, $10 million or so, but he'll play a ton of minutes and he'll get a ton of exposure and he'll play for the Lakers. And I get it. No one wants to be paid in exposure.
Yeah.
No one wants to be paid in minutes and role, but you're going to sell what you're going to sell.
Of course. And this is part of the reason why I'm a little disappointed in the outcomes for DeAndre Ayton and Marcus Smart, in that they were starting players on a team that helped us win around, and they didn't really see any benefit from that financially, from the exposure. I think it makes our argument weaker from a come play for the Lakers, and if you have a good season, everybody will know about it, and then you'll get paid. I'm not sure it works that way.
The thing is, though, is what I will say about Smart and Ayton, and I'll lead with the Ayton part, is Ayton's reputation, the cracking of that and the breaking of that down and the changing of the narrative mm-hmm. did not happen, even though we thought that he played well.
Mm-hmm.
The perception of him did not change.
Perception of players when they come to the Lakers don't become more positive in general as well.
So it's tough in that regard. Luka went from being universally hailed as a top three player to like, oh, well, maybe he's top five or top six. And I'm just like, no, he's still the same dude.
Can I give a wild stat out of nowhere?
It
goes back to the, you know, the stuff that I was talking about with the NBA awards. Most Improved Player Award has been around since 1986. And in theory, it should be open to the most number of players around the league. You don't have to be one of the very best players in the league to win it. You don't have to be a rookie. You don't have to be a defensive specialist. It should be open to everybody. Did you know that since 1986, the first year of the award, the Lakers have never had a top three player in voting in Most Improved Player Award? Because that would require you thinking more highly of the player on the Lakers.
Sure. Yes.
Or even if they're internally, right? But isn't that crazy? Only team in the league that that's true about. Never in the history of the award have the Lakers have a top three finish in Most Improved Player. So to this point, you don't come to the Lakers to improve your perception.
Yeah, and apparently you never get better.
Remarkable.
Right? No one's ever improved. Not even Kobe Bryant, who went from being a rookie who never played to being an all-star the
next
season.
Who went from undrafted to now going to be the highest paid undrafted dude of all time, near all-star, right? Nope.
And to the point on Smart, I don't know if the perception of Smart changed very much either, honestly. And he got a slight raise from what he made before, but Smart, I don't think what, how many games did Marcus play last year?
He played a good number. I'll look up, but it was, he didn't miss a ton of games. I'll look it up right now.
Overall, though, I think Smart's also a guy whose reputation precedes him in a lot of ways. I think he's recognized as a winning player. I think he's recognized as being helpful to your team's chances. I also think he's recognized as someone whose eyes can be too big for his stomach at times and who commandeers a few too many possessions and whose leadership style can be all his own, so to speak.
And also the way he plays is, it's not, I don't want to say it's reckless, but it is certainly, you can see why he has the, he was talking about the x-rays on his back earlier in the year, right? Like, you can see why 10 years of playing, he plays so hard and he will dive for that loose ball that other players won't dive for. Missed 20 games last year, played 62 games.
Yeah, the thing I was going to say was he wasn't available for awards stuff. He missed a big chunk of games at the end of the year and sort of prepping for the playoffs. And I know that some of the analytics and on-off stuff will point to him as being super helpful to the Lakers. And I agree with that stuff overall. But you zoom out and you become a box score watcher and you're just like, oh, he shot 39% from the field and low 30s from three and didn't quite make all the open ones. We watched him every day, so we know that he was helpful. We know what he did. We know that he was valuable. And we were just like, we hope Marcus Smart is back.
And even the analytic, like his year from an analytics perspective was right up there with his Defensive Player of the Year award winning year. It's just, he played for the Celtics at that time. It's a whole different environment.
And so I think the bigger point to me is that certain things aren't going to work out for your favor when you're leaving the Lakers, particularly if your reputation might precede you in certain ways. And I would argue that Kuminga would probably be more like a Malik Monk than he would be like DeAndre Ayton or Marcus Smart. But I would argue, though, too, that Kuminga is reaching sort of those Ayton levels of starting to get that perception of him of just like, do you really want to play winning basketball? Do you really want to contribute in these ways? Are you going to do the little things? And I think he's at a bit of a crossroads in this regard for his career. No one's saying he can't be a 18, 20-point scorer a game, but is he going to lock in on defense? Is he going to rebound the way that he's supposed to? And I think that what the Lakers are offering is a built-in roster construction idea of, we need you to play a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. The Lakers lost their starting power forward and their backup power forward. And they signed a guy in Mamu who's more of a 4-5 than he is a pure 4. There's minutes to be had here, and there's no one else on the roster that's going to fight you for these minutes. You're walking into a starting spot. You couldn't do that in Atlanta, where Jalen Johnson made the All-Star team, and there's not a lot of options out there for you right now. Are you going to go to Cleveland and fight Dean Wade for minutes and maybe fight LeBron James for minutes too? Or are you going to come to the Lakers? And that's why, from Kuminga's perspective, I think it is a, the Lakers do look appealing to me. I had texted you this. He lived in San Francisco, Pete. He knows what the taxes are like in California. He's just like, look, bro, $10 million. I'm maybe walking home with 4 or 5 of those. Can we bump it up a little bit more? I've tried to make my money here.
And I don't begrudge a player for that. And that's, this is that part of the season that I know people are like, ah, if he doesn't want to be here, screw him. Let's just move on. I don't mind the negotiation and all of that. But I do think that's where we're at. And I don't think that's the only alternative that the Lakers have. So we'll wrap up here. We'll be back tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a 3-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes!
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.